This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the main reason for his visit is that he will be guest of honor at the 14th of July Bastille Day celebrations. It's the annual National Day celebration for France. It commemorates, of course, the fall of the Bastille during the French Revolution.
That's Catherine Field in Paris reporting on President Trump's visit to France. Details coming up.
Also in Nigeria and Cameroon, suicide bomb attacks have killed more than 30 people this week, and 38 more mass graves have been discovered in the Kasai region of the DRC, bringing the total to more than 80.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, suicide bomb attacks killed more than 30 people in Nigeria and Cameroon this week. First, in Nigeria, police say the death toll has risen to at least 23 after four female suicide bombers attacked the Maiduguri suburb of Molai Tuesday night. AFP reports the bombers targeted a funeral ceremony. Most of the victims were from the vigilante group called the Civilian Joint Task Force. The death toll also includes seven villagers and the four bombers. About 23 people were injured. And in Cameroon, Reuters reports a suicide bomber killed at least 12 people and wounded over 40 others last night. A baby was among the victims. An army spokesman says the attack occurred in Waza, a small town near the Nigerian border. A second suicide bomber was shot dead before the explosives could be detonated. Both attacks are blamed on Boko Haram militants.
A top UN human rights official says the DRC government must identify all those responsible for the ongoing violence in the Kasai region. The UN Human Rights Director in the DRC, Jose Maria Aranaz, says 38 more mass graves have been discovered, bringing the total to more than 80. AFP reports he describes claims that rogue elements of security forces are responsible as unconvincing. He says it's essential an inquiry not only investigates those who committed the killings, but also any politician and military personnel who may have ordered them. The Catholic Church says more than 3,000 people have died in the Kasai region as government troops fight local militia. More than 1 million have been displaced. The violence began last year when a tribal chieftain openly challenged the authority of President Joseph Kabila's government.
President Trump arrived in Paris today ahead of tomorrow's Bastille Day celebrations. In fact, Trump is the guest of honor. But ahead of tomorrow's festivities, French President Emmanuel Macron is busy today launching the G5 Sahel Alliance. The alliance is made up of military forces from Chad, Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, and Mauritania. It will combat terror threats in the region. Macron is hoping for financial support from Germany. Reporter Catherine Field is following developments. From Paris, she spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua first about President Trump's visit.
The main reason for his visit is that he will be guest of honor at the 14th of July Bastille Day celebrations. It's the annual National Day celebration for France. It commemorates, of course, the fall of the Bastille during the French Revolution. The reason that Donald Trump is here is because it's exactly 100 years ago since the Americans joined the First World War. It was very late in coming in to help out the Allies in the First World War, but it was a vital time. It was really the time when France was almost on its knees. And as we get into this next 1 year of commemorations of the American involvement in the Western Front of the First World War, you're going to see just how crucial the American presence was. And it really did save Paris from falling. And that's why I think you're not going to see the big demonstrations against America that you saw, say, last week at the G20, because this is really France remembering that great alliance that they had with the United States, that transatlantic alliance that went through two world wars in the 20th century, that the French are really still, despite the fact they're a bit perplexed about President Trump, but the French are still very grateful for the commitment the Americans made in the world wars.
And of course, Americans are grateful to France for the help it gave during the American Revolution.
Indeed. I mean, when you look at the relationship between France and America, it's been going on for a very long time. There's been ups and downs, but France has also then helped out in Afghanistan. It's also had a role in the Korean War. This is a very long-standing relationship, and yes, it's had its ups and downs. A lot of people in France were querying where America was going when there was George W. Bush as president, and there have been questions about where America is going now with President Trump. But what the French president is hoping to do is that if you keep a channel of conversation even just going with the White House, then you are more likely to have some sort of influence, particularly when it comes to the fight against terrorism and in particular with what's happening with Syria. If you keep that channel open, then you may well just be able to influence the American decision-making process. And in particular, what Emmanuel Macron, the French president, is hoping is that somehow he will be able to bring U.S. President Trump background to rethinking his pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord, because that really is a diplomatic triumph, and they still cannot believe that the United States has pulled out of that Paris Climate Accord.
Now, on another matter, the French president is launching his new Sahel alliance to try to combat terrorism in that part of Africa. Tell us about that.
To the heart of what Emmanuel Macron believes should be happening in the Sahel, which is that it's not just a matter of getting troops together again to fight the threat from insurgents in that area, but also the need to have education facilities there. And in fact, if we just look at what he's been saying in the last couple of days about the Sahel, he's been talking about the lack of education, the lack of development, and long-term investment in the Sahel region. So that's what he's hoping for there. When we have a look at the sort of money that the French Development Agency is putting into Africa, it is quite a lot. They put in last year 9.4 billion euros. So that clearly is their priority area. But by having this alliance in the Sahel, he's trying to make it far more of an international commitment to the Sahel. It's going to be difficult, though, Joe, because there is a feeling that the Sahel is a region that is really just for France to look after. This is France's, if you like, backyard. And a lot of the, particularly the European countries, don't like to get involved with it. So far, all we've had is an involvement from the European Union. They've put in a sizable amount of money, but certainly we've not seen any of the other bilateral investments that Emmanuel Macron still hopes he'll be able to bring to the table.
That's reporter Catherine Field in Paris. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua.
To learn more about the G5 Sahel Joint Force, VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi spoke with Ibrahim Maiga, a researcher at the Institute for Security Studies. He explained the significance of the force.
I think it is good news for the region because the situation in the Sahel, in particularly border region of the Bitako-Gourma area, because of the recent emergence of violent extremist groups in that area.
But is forming a joint force enough to handle the continued violence and the upsurge of non-state armed groups in the Sahel region?
No, probably no, because there are some reasons for the insecurity in the region. For example, terrorist groups exploiting local conflicts to their own advantage. And the border region in G5 Sahel region are poor, and the investment in this area is weak or absent. So there is absolutely necessary to tackle these issues.
So how should be an effective strategy to prevent terrorist groups from exploiting local conflicts in recruiting fighters?
I think it is imperative for the states, in particular Mali and Niger, to address this issue, because terrorist groups exploiting these local conflicts to recruit young people, in particular Fulani people. For me, it is the first step in this border region.
What should the Sahel countries do to earn support from citizens in the neglected border regions?
It is a big issue, a big challenge for the state, because the support from people in the border region is necessary to combat and to fight terrorism in this area. Because if you don't have the support from people, you never win the fight. So it is important for state, in particular for administration, for security and defense forces, to manage this issue.
How important is improving governance and increase investment in development and infrastructure in fighting terrorism and violence in this Sahel region?
This is the real challenge for the state, because the border region neglected by state, by central power. So it is important to the state to control this space, but the control is not sufficient. The real issue is to improve the governance in this border region. Be done through a new social contract between communities and the state. Governments in this area, G5 style governments, must restore their relevance by providing basic service adapted to the diversity of this region, because the population live in this area, nomads, pastoralists. They need more development, and they need development which adapted for their habits.
That was Ibrahim Maiga, a researcher at the Institute for Security Studies from Dakar. He spoke to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi.
. 2016 was a deadly year for those trying to protect the environment. The watchdog group Global Witness says at least 200 people were killed last year defending their land, forest, and rivers from mining, logging, and agricultural companies. The group says that's twice the number of journalists killed last year. Global Witness says the trend is growing and spreading, with murders now reported in 24 countries. That's compared to 16 in 2015. It says mining is the bloodiest trade, with at least 33 murders. Brazil remains the most deadly country for those protecting the environment, with 49 murders. Global Witness says governments, companies, and investors have a duty to guarantee that activists are protected from violence and that those responsible for the killings are brought to justice.
In South Sudan, President Salva Kiir has sacked some judges who went on strike 2 months ago. Media reports say the number of judges who were fired ranged from 10 to 17. The judges had demanded higher pay and judicial system reform. They had accused the Chief Justice of interfering in the judicial system through his appointments. Reuters quotes the Deputy Information Minister as saying the striking judges had denied people justice. He says their grievances should have been resolved, though administrative channel, a spokesman for the judges, say they want to hear from lawmakers on the matter. The judges had been paid about $25 a month.
A new report finds more than 2 billion people lack access to safe drinking water, and more than twice that number lack safe sanitation. The report by the World Health Organization and UN Children's Fund is the first global assessment of water, sanitation, and hygiene for the Sustainable Development Goals. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The United Nations reports nearly 850,000 people die every year from lack of access to good water, sanitation, and hygiene. This includes more than 360,000 children under age 5 who die from diarrhea and many others from diseases such as cholera, dysentery, hepatitis A, and typhoid. The joint report by the World Health Organization and UN Children's Fund finds people living in rural areas in sub-Saharan Africa and Asia are most at risk of disease and death from poor water and sanitation-related sources. WHO Coordinator for Water, Sanitation, and Hygiene, Bruce Gordon, says this report is the first to assess the importance of hygiene to good health. He says, many homes, healthcare facilities, and schools have no soap and water for hand washing.
The one figure I'd like to kind of emphasize here is that in sub-Saharan Africa, 15% of the population only has access to a hand washing facility with soap and water. And as we know, good hygiene is one of the simplest and most effective ways to stop the spread of disease.
One of the UN's 17 Sustainable Development Goals calls for universal and equitable access to safe water and sanitation for all by 2030. UNICEF Chief of Water, Sanitation, and Hygiene, Sanjay Wijsekera, says such progress would have a knock-on effect on other development areas.
For children, access to safe water, sanitation, and hygiene not only keeps them alive and healthy, but it gives them a chance to go to school and gain an education, reduces inequalities, and it just gives them a fair start to life.
The SDGs are calling for an end to open defecation, which perpetuates a vicious cycle of disease and poverty. Open defecation is practiced by more than 890 million people, mainly in rural areas, who have no toilet or latrine. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiswu Heap, 21 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. In Nigeria and Cameroon, suicide bomb attacks have killed more than 30 people this week. 38 more mass graves have been discovered in the Kasai region of the DRC, bringing the total to more than 80. And President Trump arrived in Paris today ahead of tomorrow's Bastille Day celebration. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Kenya is less than a month from nationwide voting, and the Electoral Commission remains under pressure. The commission is appealing a high court order that it has to reopen bidding for the printing of presidential ballots a week before it was set to start, even as the opposition prepares to take the commission to court on another issue. Meanwhile, the voter registry continues to spark debate and confusion. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf reports.
When Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission opened a short message platform 2 weeks ago so the public could check voter details, many, like Florence, a businesswoman, used it and found her details were correct, but not those of her sibling. She says her sister checked her details and found her identification number was registered to another person, and she was a registered voter in Kiambu, Gatundu East, while she is a registered voter at Buruburu in Nairobi. She went to where she registered as a voter, and they put her name back. She was furious. Many Kenyans sent random numbers or incomplete digits, but they were still registered, raising questions on the credibility of the register. Electoral Body Commissioner Roslyn Akombe defended her organization.
What we have seen is that in a majority of those cases, people are putting in maybe their correct national ID numbers, but that's not probably what we have in the system, because maybe a number has been transposed. And so when they try to put in the information, it doesn't come out. But it does not mean that they are not in the register.
The audit firm KPMG, which was hired to clean the register, found 90,000 dead voters on the rolls. and another 500,000 people who use wrong or inconsistent ID numbers. The electoral body says it has removed at least 88,000 dead voters from the list. Florist Simon Musungu says the voter register must be published. The register should be published so that everyone can verify their details. That will benefit the IEBC too. They cannot know everything. There is a problem because one vote matters. Even if one person does not vote, you deny him his rights. The Electoral Commission and the opposition have been battling in the courts on matters dealing the cancellation of the presidential ballot papers by the High Court. The Electoral Commission is appealing that decision. The opposition is asking the court to rule on what means of ballot counting and transmitting the results should be used. In December, the Parliament passed a law allowing the IEBC to use manual voting and transmission in case the electronic technology fails. The head of the Electoral Law and Governance Institute in Africa, Felix Odhiambo, says the failures of the past are haunting the Commission.
IEBC is yet to demonstrate that technology will work. Remember, in 2013, despite the assurances by the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, the technology failed. So, as we speak, the Elections Act talks of technology to be put in place 60 days to the elections, tested, and its workability ascertained. But as we speak, the IEBC has not contested these gadgets, so the opinion is still divided as to whether they'll work or not.
Political observers predict a close contest between the incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga. Many hope the August 8th elections will be free, fair and credible to avoid violence similar to that in 2008. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
To our audience on VOA's FM in Accra, Ghana. We'll be off the air for 3 days of July 20th, 21st, and 22nd to do necessary technical repairs. We will resume our broadcast on July 23rd. However, you can still listen to VOA's radio programming on our shortwaves, 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band. We are also online at voanews.com. Your friends at VOA regret the temporary loss of our FM broadcast on those days.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.